Touchstone Pictures presents A Blinding Edge Pictures Kennedy Marshall production. Mel Gibson, Joaquin Phoenix, Signs, Cherry Jones, Rory Culkin, Abigail Breslin, Patricia Callamber. Music by James Newton Howard. Written, produced, and directed by M. Night Shyamalan. An upstairs window overlooks a lawned yard backing onto a cornfield. On the inside of the glass, a framed photograph shows a 40-something reverend, surrounded by his wife and two children. Waking with a start, Father Graham Hess sits up in bed. He is alone. Stepping out onto the landing, he approaches a door plastered with children's drawings. Listening for a moment, he turns away and picks a pair of socks up off the floor before heading to the bathroom. Next to the bathroom door, the wallpaper is marked with the dirt outline of a cross that once hung there. Hearing a distant scream, Graham rushes back across the landing and opens the bedroom door. Elsewhere, Merrill, a man in his late 20s, hears the screams and jumps out of bed. Emerging from his room above a garage, he joins Graham in the backyard.
Where are they?
The pair go tearing through the cornfield.
Morgan!
Reaching a narrow gap in the 6-foot stalks, they spot a little girl standing on her own in the distance.
Bo? Bo? Bo, where's Morgan? Bo?
Are you in my dream too?
This is not a dream.
Graham finds his son staring straight ahead with a faraway look in his eyes.
Morgan, what's happening?
The dogs are barking. Woke us up.
Are you hurt?
I think God did it.
Did what, Morgan?
Taking him by the chin, Morgan turns Graham's head to face the direction he's been staring. Walking towards the object of Morgan's attention, Graham stops and takes in something that fills him with trepidation. Swallowing down hard, he takes a step forward and treads on stalks that have been flattened to the ground. At the other side of a clearing, two German shepherds are running around in an agitated state. From the air, the clearing is a perfect circle. From a higher altitude, the circle forms part of a series of circular symbols carved into the landscape. Bucks County, Pennsylvania. 45 miles outside Philadelphia.
Look, Lee, I don't even care if it was him. And you could just have a word with him, and that'd be enough for me. See, it was strange finding the crops that way. The kids were confused by it, and sure take the strangeness away if I knew it was just Lionel and the Wolfenden brothers messing around, that's all. At the movies. Are you sure? All right, then. Thanks for your patience, Lee. Yeah, bye.
Morgan and Beau are with one of the dogs.
Houdini peed. I think he's sick.
Why don't you take him outside? I'll call Dr. Crawford.
He doesn't treat animals.
And he'll know what to do.
As Morgan leads Houdini out by his collar, Graham takes a piece of kitchen roll and begins soaking up the mess on the floor. Crossing the kitchen to put it in the bin, he finds a police officer leaning against the door.
Oh, that was quick, Caroline. I only called you folks 2 hours ago.
Oh, Mrs. Kendallman twisted her ankle, as she puts it, diving for her life when a bunch of school kids rode down the sidewalk on skateboards. She went down to Thornton's store this morning and started spitting on the new skateboards. Spitting! By the time I got there, Mrs. Kendallman had sprayed the whole damn place. And she must have had a cold or something. I'm telling you, I won't eat for a week. So what happened to your crops?
Morgan turns some chicken over with a barbecue fork.
Dad's gonna burn these again.
Kneeling over Houdini, Beau takes a sip from a glass of water.
It's contaminated.
You don't even know what that word means.
Morgan tries some.
It's not contaminated. It's just tap water pouring in his bowl.
It tastes funny.
It does not. Besides, he licks his butt every day. I don't think he'll mind.
Beau pours the water into the dog bowl. Putting down the empty glass, she slides the bowl towards Houdini.
Houdini? Beau, don't run. What's wrong, boy? Stop it, Houdini.
Graham showing Carol Ann the crop circle.
Look at where it's bent over, Father.
It's not broken.
Now, what kind of machine can bend a stalk of corn over without breaking it?
Can't be by hand. It's too perfect.
It doesn't sound much like Lionel Pritchard and the Wolfenden brothers. They can't take a piss without wetting the front of their pants. I don't think anyone else around here has had any problems. I was over Theo Henry's farm yesterday afternoon, and he would have mentioned something.
Why were you at Theo's place?
Some animals around the county have been acting funny. And some of them violent.
What, is it a virus?
I don't think so, Father. They're more edgy. They're on alert. It's almost like they act when they smell a predator around, peeing on themselves and everything.
Getting up off his knees, Graham turns back towards the house.
Caroline? Please stop calling me Father.
What's wrong?
I don't hear my children.
As they emerge from the cornfield a moment later, Graham looks across the yard to see Morgan kneeling over Houdini. Moving closer, he notices the barbecue fork sticking out of Houdini's neck. Morgan looks up at him with teary eyes.
You fell on me. You wanted to kill Beau.
He raises an inhaler to his mouth and takes a deep breath. Kneeling down, Graham reaches over Houdini and takes Morgan by the hand.
Did he hurt you?
No.
I'm so sorry, Morgan.
Brushing his dad's hand off his shoulder, Morgan heads inside. Beau's sitting on the jungle gym, holding her knees to her chest. As Graham lifts her into his arms and carries her back to the house, Meryl steps outside, carrying some food.
Where were you?
Houdini's shack.
Tie Isabel up to the back of the shed, please, and make sure the knot's very tight.
Looking over at Houdini, Meryl puts down the food, then reaches for Isabel's collar and leads her towards the barn. Carol Ann pulls the fork from Houdini's neck. On the porch, a star-shaped wind chime sways back and forth as day turns to night. Waking suddenly, Graham finds Beau standing by his bed.
What's the matter?
There's a monster outside my room. Can I have a glass of water?
What's wrong with the water next to your bed?
It tastes old.
Walking her back to the bedroom, Graham discovers Morgan lying on his front with his head hanging over the edge of the bed. Rolling him onto his back, Graham walks over to Beau's bed and sits down next to her. She turns to him, and Graham looks deep into her eyes.
What are you thinking about?
Why do you talk to Mom when you're by yourself?
Makes me feel better.
Does she ever answer back? She never answers me either.
Graham glances out of the window. A shadowy figure's standing on the roof of the barn watching them. Graham wakes Meryl.
What? Lionel Pritchard and the Wolfington brothers are back. It's time for an ass whooping. This is not an intelligent way to approach this. Lee is a friend of mine. This is his son.
Yeah, we'll be doing Lee a favor. All right, listen. We both go outside, move around the house in opposite directions. We act crazy, insane with anger, make them crap in their pants, force them around till we meet up on the other side.
Explain that crazy.
You'll curse and stuff.
Want me to curse?
You don't mean it. It's just for show. What?
Well, it won't be convincing. It doesn't sound natural when I curse.
Just make noises then.
Explain noises.
Are you gonna do this or what?
No, I'm not.
All right, you want them stealing something in the house next time? On the count of three. One, two, three.
They run outside.
Ah! I'm insane with anger! We're gonna beat your ass, bitch!
A dustbin rolls out from behind the house.
We're gonna tear your head off! I'm losing my mind! It's time for an ass-whooping!
Graham and Meryl meet at the back door.
I cursed.
I heard.
They look up at the roof.
How did he get off?
Keeping his gaze fixed on the roof, Meryl paces from side to side, trying to spot the intruder.
Are you sure it says Lionel Pritchard?
They both turn around to see the swing rocking back and forth, and the stalks beyond it rustling. The next day, Carol Ann's back at the house. Morgan's playing with her walkie-talkie.
You like that? You got an old baby monitor around?
Beau had an old baby monitor.
You can use Beau's baby monitor as a walkie-talkie.
You can?
Yeah. It only works one way, but that'll do fine. That is, until someone gets you an old walkie-talkie left over at the station.
Beau's watching cartoons in the next room.
Hey, Beau. Turn that down until Officer Paskey leaves. You're too old to still be doing this. You take a glass of water and you finish it. Now, what's wrong with this one?
It has dust in it.
This one?
A hair.
This one?
Morgan took a sip and it has his amoebas in it.
So how are you, Meryl?
Fine.
How's work at the gas station?
Stimulating.
I never got a chance to tell you, but I thought you moving in here with your brother after. It was a nice thing to do.
I don't think I'm up much.
Carol Ann glances at Morgan.
You are.
Returning to the dining room, Graham goes to pick up three abandoned glasses of water, but notices four more on the other side of the room and decides not to bother. He sits down next to Meryl.
Sorry.
Okay, so far I have. It was very dark.
Yes, it was.
You can't describe him at all. Don't you think that's kind of odd?
A little.
I don't know whether to look for a giant or a midget.
No, he definitely wasn't a midget.
Okay. So he was tall.
I would say so, yes.
Probably.
Over 6 feet?
It was very dark.
Yes, it was.
How certain are you that this was a male?
Oh, I don't know any girls who could run like that.
I don't know, Meryl. I've seen some of those women on the Olympics. They can run like the wind.
This guy got on our roof in like a second. Our roof is 10 feet high.
They have women's high jumping in the Olympics. They got these Scandinavian women who can jump clean over me.
Caroline, I know you're making a point here. I just don't know what it is.
An out-of-town woman stopped by the diner yesterday afternoon and started yelling and cussing because they didn't have her favorite cigarettes at the vending machine. She scared a couple of the customers. No one's seen her since. And my point is, we don't know anything about the person you saw. And we should just keep all possibilities available.
Beau taps Graham on the shoulder.
Dad, where's the remote?
I don't know, baby. Why don't you check in the sofa cushions?
Excluding the possibility that a female Scandinavian Olympian was running around outside our house last night, what else might be a possibility?
I'm not done asking questions, and I don't appreciate sarcasm. Do you two have anyone who might have a grudge or something against you? Maybe a church member who might not have liked the fact that you left the church?
I don't think so.
Okay, I was out of line with the whole female Scandinavian Olympian thing. It's just, I'm pretty strong, and I'm pretty fast. And I was running as fast as I could, and this guy, he was just toying with us.
There's only food under the sofa.
Baby, why don't you just change the channel on the television?
I did.
And?
Same shows on every station.
Every station?
A breaking news report shows crop circles in India.
Beau, turn up the volume.
Crop science first emerged in the late 70s with renewed interest in extraterrestrial life. They died out by the early 80s, dismissed as hoaxes. This new resurgence is wholly different. The speed and the quantity in which it has appeared implies the coordination of hundreds of individuals over many countries.
Bangalore, India.
There are only a limited number of explanations. Either this is one of the most elaborate hoaxes ever created, or basically, it's for real.
Morgan takes a puff on his inhaler.
Extraterrestrials.
What in God's name is going on?
I did some research after I saw your crops. Two or three guys can make a design the size of the one in your field overnight. Using just boards and ropes.
Really?
That's how these things have been done in the past. But there's so many now. How could so many people be in on it? I can't think straight. I'm gonna go back to the station and have a cup of Edgar's coffee and try to think clear, and after that I might make some calls. But I'll tell you something, what I said in there, it still goes. Your family has been through a lot. And the last thing these children need to do is worry about some crazy things happening in the world. I'll take them into town and get their minds and your mind on everyday things. Good medicine.
It's good advice.
And you take care of yourself, Graham.
Carol Ann gets into her car, and Graham sees her off from the driveway.
The footage you're watching was shot yesterday afternoon by a 34-year-old local cameraman in Bangalore, the southern city of India. It's the 18th reported crop sign found in that country in the last 72 hours.
In the family car.
Come here, turn on the radio.
They are signs intended to be seen from the sky.
No radio either. Just for a while.
Morgan lets out a weary sigh. From above, the car makes its way into town. They park up, and Merrill puts some coins in a parking meter as he and the rest of the family step onto the curb.
Put money?
As they walk off along the pavement, Morgan holds out his hand, and Beau quickens her step to take it. Graham turns to Merrill.
Be back for pizza in 15.
Morgan's watching the owners of a shop.
It's just a bunch of crock. They're trying to sell sodas. It's plain and simple. I've been watching these reports since morning. I have seen 12 soda commercials so far. 12!
Do you have any books on extraterrestrials?
Now, don't tell me you believe this horse manure.
As a matter of fact, I think we have one. Came by mistake in a shipment, decided to keep it for the city people. Last row, third book on the left, honey.
Why is no one saying the obvious? These are just copycats. Someone somewhere does the first one.
It was asthma medicine, right, Father?
It's on the internet.
For Morgan Hiss. And it's not Father anymore.
Less than an hour, a couple hundred people get the same brilliant idea, and here we are, on the verge of mass hysteria.
The young pharmacist looks up at Graham.
Can I ask you a favor, Father? I need to clear my conscience. Will you listen to me?
Tracy, I am not a reverend anymore. I haven't been for 6 months. You know this.
All this stuff on TV. Two girls came in here talking about the end of the world. I'm just a little scared. Please, I need to clear my conscience.
Merrill's looking at a poster in an army recruitment office.
I've got it figured.
A sergeant sitting behind a desk.
You do? I've had two separate folks tell me there have been strangers around these parts last couple nights. Can't tell what they look like, because they're staying in the shadows, covert-like. Nobody's been hurt, mind you, and that's the giveaway.
I see.
It's called probing. It's a military procedure. You send out a reconnaissance group, very small, check things out. Not to engage, but to evaluate the situation, evaluate the level of danger, make sure things are all clear.
Clear for what?
for the rest of them.
Merrill smiles nervously.
Yeah. You got a pamphlet or something I can read?
Sure.
Thanks.
You didn't used to play baseball, did you? Shit, I know you. You're Merrill Hess. I was there the day you hit that 507-footer over the left field wall. Set the record. Man, that thing had a motor on it. It's still the record, right?
Got the bat at home, on the wall.
You've got two minor league home run records, don't you?
Five.
Why weren't you in the pros making stacks of cash and getting your toes licked by beautiful women?
Because he has another record most people don't know about. He has the minor league strikeout record.
Hello, Lionel.
Merrill's a class A screw-up. He would just swing that bat as hard as he could every time. Didn't matter what the coaches said. Didn't matter who was on base. He would just whip that bat through the air as hard as he could. Looked like a lumberjack chopping down a tree. Merrill here has more strikeouts than any two players.
You really got the strikeout record?
Merrill folds up the pamphlet and puts it in his pocket.
Felt wrong not to swing.
Walking up behind Lionel as he fills out a form, Merrill stamps his foot, making him flinch. Morgan's reading the book on extraterrestrials as Bo takes a sip of water.
It's contaminated.
Carl, there's something wrong with our water.
Your water's fine. Bo has this thing about her drinking water. She had it her whole life. It's like a tick people have, except it's not a tick.
Is that right?
13! Don't give me that so-so soda. Same old cola. I wanna pop.
I'll take it.
I cursed 37 times last week. I said the F word a couple of times, but mostly...
shits.
And... bastards. Is douchebag a curse?
I suppose that would depend on its usage.
How about, John, you're a douchebag for kissing Barbara?
It's a curse.
Then it's not 37, it's 71.
Merrill, Morgan, and Beau have already started eating.
Pharmacy crowded?
I don't want any one of you spending time with Tracy Abernathy alone. Is that understood?
They all nod. But just as Graham's beginning to look relieved, something outside catches his eye. An Asian man opens the door of a 4x4 parked outside. Morgan sees Graham staring.
Is that him?
Bo and Merrill gaze at the man.
Yeah.
While Graham hasn't taken his eyes off him for a second. Closing the car door, the man turns towards the restaurant and sees them staring. Unnerved, he gets into his car and reverses away from the curb.
Who is he?
As the 4x4 disappears up the road, Graham turns back to the table and takes a bite out of his pizza. A little later, the family arrives back at the house. Graham and Merrill are taking their seatbelts off when they hear a noise coming from the back seat. As they both look over their shoulder, Morgan reaches down and picks up the source of the noise.
What is it?
It's Bo's baby monitor.
I found it in the basement. I'm going to use it as a walkie-talkie.
Morgan raises the monitor to his ear.
What if it's catching a signal from them?
He points up at the sky.
It's not.
But it wasn't working.
Morgan, this crop stuff is about a bunch of nerds who never had a girlfriend in their lives. They're like 30 and they work up little codes together and they analyze Greek mythology and make up secret societies where other guys who never had girlfriends before can join in. They do stupid crap like this to feel special. It's a scam. Nerds were doing it 25 years ago, new nerds are doing it again.
He turns to Graham.
It's just static, Morgan. Turn it up, see?
It's a code.
Why can't I get girlfriends?
Can I see that, please?
Morgan hands it over.
This noise. It's broken, Morgan. It's just gonna keep doing this. Maybe some new batteries.
We might lose a signal.
This is exactly what the nerds want.
I'm getting out now.
Nobody move. Voices. Did you hear that? Not English, though. You heard the voices, right, Uncle Merrill?
Merrill looks at him.
I heard them, Morgan.
Graham lowers his ear to the monitor.
Probably picking up another baby monitor.
That's right.
Merrill reaches out for the monitor.
Is it?
See, this is why we're not watching TV. People get obsessed. I'm letting go now.
No, Dad!
Don't do it!
You'll lose the signal.
Don't let go. It gets clearer the higher you hold it.
Morgan climbs onto the car roof.
I got it.
Well, honey, I don't want you climbing on the car.
Merrill holds on to Morgan as he raises the baby monitor into the air, while Graham keeps a firm grip on Beau as she tries to scramble onto the roof. But when Merrill reaches out to take Beau's hand...
Stop! There's two of them talking.
Morgan looks disappointed as Merrill lets go of Beau's hand. That night, Graham steps out of the house carrying a dog bowl. But as he takes Isabel her dinner, he finds her tugging at her chain and barking wildly at the cornfield. Graham looks over at the wall of crops bordering the yard. Suddenly, Isabel jumps up at Graham, with only her chain keeping her from mauling him. Jumping back, Graham looks again at the cornfield.
Isabel, you're going to feel very silly when this turns out to be all just make-believe.
Reaching for a toolbox, Graham takes out a torch and points it at the crops. Then, taking a few tentative steps forward, he inches towards the cornfield. Reaching the edge of the yard, he crosses the border into the field. Edging his way between the tall shoots, feeling the leaves brushing against his shoulders, Graham ventures deeper into the ever-thickening forest of crops, until eventually, the beam of his torch is unable to penetrate more than a few feet. He pauses. He spins around, but his torch beam falls only on more shoots. Putting his arm up in front of his face, Graham pushes his way through the stalks. Finding himself at the edge of an enormous crop circle, he stops and looks around, taking in its sheer scale. From above, his torch beam barely reaches halfway across the clearing.
You're wasting your time here! I'm not going to report this or anything you do to my crops to the news or TV or anybody. You're not going to get famous.
Looking around nervously, he backs to the edge of the circle, then turns and goes back the way he came. Moving more rapidly, he fights his way through the towering stalks until eventually emerging in the narrow gap forming a pathway through the field. Pausing, he stands with his back to a wall of crops. Spinning around, he drops the torch, which loses power on impact with the ground. Keeping his gaze fixed firmly on the crops, Graham bends down and feels for the torch. But as he taps it until it flares up once more, its beam falls upon a slender green leg disappearing into the crops. Jumping back, Graham takes off in the opposite direction. Sprinting to put distance between himself and the intruder, he turns off the path and battles his way through the corn. Inside the house, Morgan and Beau splash each other as they stand side by side washing the dishes. Across the room, Merrill's reading the army recruitment pamphlet. None of them notice as Graham steps slowly and silently into the house and in a daze takes a seat at the kitchen table. Eventually, Morgan and Beau turn around to see him sitting with his head bowed. As Morgan steps tentatively towards him, Merrill glances over his shoulder, then gets to his feet and walks across. Graham looks up at them.
Okay. Let's turn on the TV.
Lights hovering in the night sky.
First appeared 52 minutes ago. Mexico City officials, as well as U.S. officials, have confirmed that these are not aircraft from either government's air force. The first sighting was made by an Air Mexico 747 en route from Mazatlan to New York as the unidentified crafts entered Mexico City airspace. They were not detected by radar by either country.
The nerds were right.
We have to tape this.
Morgan finds a tape.
My ballet recital.
Listen, Beau, this is very important. Everything people have written about in science books is going to change. The history of the world's future is on the TV right now. We need to record this so you can show your children this tape and say you were there. For your children, Beau.
My ballet recital.
Dad.
Find another tape.
Morgan quickly does as he's told.
Uncle Merrill, I'm using your tape.
It's entitled Swimsuit Special.
You're seeing a live feed from our affiliate down here in Mexico City. This image has not been adjusted or enhanced in any way. What you're seeing is real. It's unbelievable. Everything they wrote in science books is about to change.
I told you.
Morgan takes a puff on his inhaler. Later, Graham and Merrill are still glued to the TV, while Morgan and Beau sleep next to them.
Some people are probably thinking this is the end of the world.
That's true.
Do you think it could be?
Yes.
How can you say that?
That wasn't the answer you wanted.
Couldn't you pretend to be like you used to be? Give me some comfort.
People break down into two groups. When they experience something lucky, group number one sees it as more than luck, more than coincidence. They see it as a sign, evidence that there is someone up there watching out for them. Group number two sees it as just pure luck. happy turn of chance. I'm sure the people in group number two are looking at those 14 lights in a very suspicious way. For them, this situation is a 50-50. Could be bad. Could be good. But deep down, they feel that whatever happens, they're on their own. And that fills them with fear. Yeah, there are those people. But there's a whole lot of people in the group number one. And they see those 14 lights. They're looking at a miracle. And deep down, they feel that whatever's going to happen, there'll be someone there to help them. And that fills them with hope. See, what you have to ask yourself is, what kind of person are you? Are you the kind that sees signs, sees miracles? Or do you believe that people just get lucky? Or look at the question this way. Is it possible that there are no coincidences?
Merrill considers.
I was at this party once. I'm on the couch with Random McKinney. She's just sitting there, looking beautiful, staring at me. I go to lean in and kiss her. And I realize I have gum in my mouth. So I turn, take out the gum, stuff it in a paper cup next to the sofa, and turn around. Random McKinney throws up all over herself. I knew the second it happened, it was a miracle. I could have been kissing her when she threw up. That would have scarred me for life. I may never have recovered. I'm a miracle man. Those lights are a miracle.
There you go.
So which type are you?
Do you feel comforted?
Yeah, I do.
Then what does it matter?
Merrill can't hide his disappointment.
I never told you the last words that Colleen said before they let her die. She said, "See." And her eyes glazed a bit. And then she said, "Swing away." You know why she said that? Because the nerve endings in her brain were firing as she died. And some random memory of us at one of your baseball games just popped into her head. There is no one watching out for us, Merrill. We are all on our own.
They turn back to the TV. It's night, and Graham's wearing his collar as he drives along an isolated road lined with tall trees. Ambulances and police cars are parked across the road, with Carol Ann standing in front of them, flagging him down. Pulling up, Graham gets out of his car and gravely walks up to her.
What do you know?
Well, there was an accident drunk driving. They weren't sure.
And he wasn't drunk. Ray fell asleep at the wheel.
Is he okay?
That was the first thing Colleen asked, too.
She's talking. What ambulance is she in?
She's not in an ambulance, Father.
Graham awakes, finding himself back on the sofa. It's morning, and Graham's alone. Realizing the TV that was in front of the sofa's no longer there, he notices a power cable snaking its way across the floor. Getting to his feet, he follows it out the room and into the hall, where it disappears under a cupboard door. Merrill's sitting in the cupboard, watching TV.
For the kids' protection, all they were doing was watching TV from 5 a.m. I felt like they were getting obsessed, like you said. They should be playing Furry Furry Rabbit or Tea Party or something.
What's Furry Furry Rabbit?
It's a game, isn't it? Anyways, they closed the schools, and there's been some interesting developments.
What time is it?
11 a.m. They're gone. But they're not really gone. We just can't see them. Early this morning, a bird flew into the area where the lights were hovering last night. It stopped dead in the air and fell straight down. They caught it on tape. They've been playing it all morning. The footage looks like the bird flew into a wall in the sky. They found the bird. His head was crushed in. They think they have some kind of invisible shielding going, like an optical illusion. They're still there, hovering. Some people think there's more of them now, all over the place, over us even. There's a theory about the crop circles. I think it'd be some kind of...
Graham's gone.
Some kind of landmark visual mapping system so they could navigate, coordinate. Makes sense.
Later, Graham steps out of the bathroom in his robe and walks up to a window overlooking the backyard. He's gazing outside when he hears whispers coming from across the landing. He crosses to the kids' bedroom and finds them both wearing tin foil cones on their heads.
So the aliens can't read our minds.
Oh. Oh, of course.
He sits down between them.
They tell you everything in this book. Just probably very small, like my height. Because as the brains developed, there was no use for physical development. It also says they're probably vegetarians, because they would realize the benefits of such a diet.
Who wrote this book?
Scientists who've been persecuted for their beliefs.
That means they're unemployed.
We can make fun of it, then forget it.
This is serious.
Graham glances at their cones.
I don't know what got into me.
There are pictures. Dr. Bimbo, one of the authors of the book.
Bimbo?
Dad.
I just asked his name.
You had a tone. So there are two reasons why extraterrestrials will visit us. To make contact in the spirit of exploration and furthering the knowledge of the universe. Or the other reason, they're hostile. They've used up all the resources on their planet. They're looking to harvest our planet next.
Taking the book from him, Graham begins leafing through it. On each page, illustrations depict the extraterrestrial as figures with slender frames, oversized round heads, and large eyes. Turning another page, he comes to a color drawing of a flying saucer aiming two laser beams at a farmhouse with a porch. Flames lick from the upstairs windows.
Looks a little like our house, doesn't it?
Same windows.
It's weird.
Moving his gaze across the page, Graham notices a man and two children lying on the ground. They stare at the image. They jump in unison.
That's enough from Dr. Bimbo for now. Everybody in this house needs to calm down, eat some fruit or something.
Graham answers the phone on the landing.
Hello?
Father?
Hello? Hello?
Standing with the phone against his ear, Graham casts his gaze towards a room containing a tailor's dummy wearing a dress and sewing machine. A bit later, Graham's dressed as he grabs his jacket from the cupboard under the stairs.
I'm going out for a few minutes. No one leaves this house. No one.
Where are you going?
Ray Reddy's house.
Why?
I think he just called here.
Beau standing by Morgan's side as he scans the sky through a telescope.
You don't think something bad will happen, do you, Morgan?
Why? You have one of your feelings again?
Beau nods.
Is it bad?
She nods again.
Won't let anything bad happen to you.
I don't want you to die.
You said I was gonna die. You said I was gonna die.
Graham's outside a house with a mailbox marked R Ready, Veterinarian. Opening an outer screen door, he peers in through the window. Stepping back and closing the door, he considers for a moment, then walks along the porch leading around the house. Walking up to a window, he peers into an office with a lamp lying on the floor beside an upturned chair. Stepping away from the window, Graham turns around to see Ray's 4x4 parked in the driveway, with a figure sitting behind the wheel. Walking over to the vehicle, he finds Ray sitting in the driver's seat, gripping the steering wheel and staring into space. Cautiously, Graham leans in through the open passenger window.
Hello, Ray.
Ray doesn't acknowledge him. The back of the car's loaded with his possessions, and the bottom of his shirt stained with blood.
I wrote your number down to call you. It's been sitting next to the phone for 6 months. When I knew it was inside the house, I couldn't think of any other number to call. I panicked. Thank you for coming, Father.
You're welcome, Ray.
I worked so long that night. I've never fallen asleep driving before. Ever since. Most of the ride home, there wasn't a car in sight in either direction. If I'd have fallen asleep then, I would have ended up in a ditch with a headache. It had to be at that right moment. That 10, 15 seconds when I passed her walking. It was like it was meant to be.
He turns to face Graham for the first time.
I guess if this is the end of the world, I'm screwed, right? People who kill reverends' wives aren't exactly ushered to the front of the line in heaven.
Where are you going?
To the lake. The way I see it, these places marked in crops and such, none of them are really near water. I don't think they like water. Can't be any worse than here.
Did you see something, Ray?
I know what I've done to you. I made you question your faith. I'm truly sorry for what I've done to you and yours.
Forcing back tears, Graham looks him in the eye and nods.
Don't open my pantry, Father. I found one of them in there and locked him in.
Graham looks over at the house. In the cupboard under the stairs, Merrill's woken by a news report.
The startling footage we're about to show you was photographed by a 42-year-old, Romero Valadares. This video was taken yesterday afternoon at his son's 7th birthday in the city of Passo Fundo, Brazil. It was sent to the local news bureau there and sent to us via satellite just a few minutes ago. All initial opinions are this is genuine. What you're about to see may disturb you.
Merrill moves his chair nearer to the screen. Home movie footage shows a group of children crowding around a set of French windows to look out into a yard containing a table laid out with party food. The camera focuses on bushes at the back of the yard. The children move to another window.
Move, children! Vamanos!
The window looks out into a passageway between the bushes and a building. As the camera zooms in on the far end, a tall, spindly alien walks across the screen. Jumping out of his chair, Merrill recoils to the back of the cupboard. The footage on the TV pauses, then rewinds. Wide-eyed and open-mouthed, Merrill returns to his seat and watches transfixed as the image is replayed, then frozen, as the alien comes into view. Graham's inside Ray's house. Walking into the kitchen, he finds overturned chairs scattered over the floor and a table on its side leaning against the pantry door. Walking towards it, he sees a shadow move across the light under the door.
Hello?
The shadow stops moving.
The police are here. I am with them. I am a police officer. I just want to talk with you. We know all about the hoax. We already took some of your friends downtown in a paddy wagon.
He immediately regrets calling it a paddy wagon.
Just tell us your name and why you did it, and we'll give you the same deal we gave the others. Don't throw your life away, son.
Getting down on his knees, he lowers his face to the floor and peers underneath the door. Seeing only shards of broken glass, he lifts himself off the floor and considers. Noticing some chopped vegetables on the counter, he reaches for a kitchen knife lying next to them. Looking down at it, he gazes at his reflection in the blade. Moving towards the pantry, he reaches out the knife so its tip touches the floor underneath the door. Using the blade's reflective surface to see inside, he's unable to glimpse more than a few bottles on shelves. Lowering himself onto his stomach, he goes to peer underneath the door once more, but quickly reconsiders. Putting down the knife, he gets up off his knees and walks out of the kitchen. But as he reaches the end of the hall, he changes his mind once more. Marching back into the kitchen, he picks up the knife and kneels down by the pantry. Suddenly, a clawed hand emerges from underneath the door. Grasping the knife, Graham slices off two of its fingers. Above the cornfields, a flock of birds takes to the air and wafts across the sky. Returning home, Graham steps into the house and locks the door. Looking into the living room, he finds Merrill, Morgan and Beau sitting on the sofa wearing tinfoil cones. Turning his back on them, he walks over to the stairs and sits down.
Their skin changes colors. That's why we couldn't see him that night.
Tell me something, Morgan. In this book of yours, they happen to detail what would happen if they were hostile.
Yes. Said they would probably invade. They would use ground tactics, hand-to-hand combat. They wouldn't use our technology or fight an airborne battle, because they know eventually we would use nuclear weapons, and the planet would be useless to them.
How could anyone possibly know that information? It's ridiculous. What else did it say?
They said there are one of two outcomes of an invasion. One, they fight and are defeated and have to return again with full forces hundreds, maybe even thousands of years later.
Months too.
They win.
I'm sorry, what book is this?
Is this really happening? I heard a theory that they don't like places near water. Maybe we'd be safe from them near a lake or something.
Sounds made up.
Getting back to his feet, Graham walks into the living room.
I saw one of them at Ray Reddy's house. I can't be sure, but I got the distinct feeling it wanted to harm me. So, we can choose to believe this lake idea, pack up and go. Or we can stay here, hide inside our home, wait it out. We might be overreacting, but I'm willing to live with that. Either way, at least we'll be together. All those in favor of the lake idea, raise your hand.
Beau and Graham raise their hands.
Yeah. All those in favor of home, raise your hand.
Morgan and Merrill raise theirs.
Okay. My vote counts as two.
That's bullshit! You're cheating!
Morgan, calm down. I get two votes because I represent two parents here.
We don't know anything yet. We'll be safe here anyway. I don't want to leave home. This is where we lived with Mom.
It's got nothing to do with this.
I changed my vote.
You can't change your vote.
All those in favor of home, raise your hand.
This is ridiculous.
You lose. 3-2.
Morgan sits back down, and Graham joins them on the sofa.
We're going to board up every window in this house.
How do we know boards will do anything?
Because they seem to have trouble with pantry doors.
Later, Merrill steps out of his room above the garage, carrying a few things in a sack. Smoking a cigarette as he walks back to the house, he glances at the cornfield bordering the yard and slows to a stop. Dropping his sack, he picks up a stone and hurls it into the crops. He waits in anticipation. When nothing happens, he backs towards the house, picks up his sack, and heads inside. Morgan and Beau are watching TV in the cupboard under the stairs.
The information we're receiving comes from our affiliates across the world.
Dad, Uncle Merrill!
Lights in the sky.
Amman joins Nairobi, Beijing, and Jerusalem as the latest to confirm the appearance of lights.
There are lights in over 274 cities. Just think it'll be 400 within the hour. They're appearing at or within 1 mile of crop signs.
They were for navigation. They made them out. They're gonna be within a mile of us.
Dad.
Yes.
They think these are stages immediately preceding an attack maneuver. I was wrong. They're hostile.
It's like War of the Worlds.
Ground forces have been assembled in countries throughout the globe. Hundreds of thousands have flocked to temples, synagogues, and churches.
Graham stares at the screen.
God be with us all.
Graham takes in the images, trepidation etched on his face.
I'm going to get back to the windows.
Morgan and Beau remained glued to the TV. Meryl kneels down beside them.
That's okay.
Some guy had a sign saying it was the end of the world.
Don't worry.
You won't let anything happen to us, right?
No way.
I wish you were my dad.
What did you say? Don't you ever say anything like that again. Ever.
Morgan turns back to the TV. Walking up to a window, Graham anxiously peers outside before lifting a board up against the glass. Outside, the wind chimes hanging over the porch sway back and forth in the breeze. Meryl discovers Graham sitting on the floor with his back against a wall.
There's too many windows in the bedrooms. We don't have enough boards.
We'll board up the bedroom doors.
Where are we gonna sleep?
In the family room.
What about Isabel?
We'll tie her up in the garage after dinner.
I'll make some sandwiches.
I want spaghetti.
We should eat fast, Beau.
Spaghetti sounds great. What do you want, Morgan?
Anything? French toast. And mashed potatoes.
Now we're talking. How about you, Meryl?
Chicken teriyaki.
Good choice. I'm going to have a cheeseburger with bacon. Extra bacon.
A little later, the sinks piled with dirty pots and pans, and the kitchen counters littered with potato skins and chopped vegetables. The family is sitting around the dining table, silently staring at the feast in front of them. Graham shifts uncomfortably in his chair.
What's the matter with everyone? Eat.
Maybe we should say a prayer.
No.
Why not?
We're not saying a prayer.
Bo has a bad feeling.
I had a dream.
We aren't saying a prayer. Eat.
I hate you.
That's fine.
You let Mom die.
Morgan. I am not wasting one more minute of my life on prayer. Not one more minute. Understood? Now, we are going to enjoy this meal. No one can stop us from enjoying this meal, so enjoy it! Stop crying!
Graham,
don't yell at her!
All right. Since you're all not gonna eat, I'm gonna try some of everything.
He piles the food onto his plate. Beau stares at him, sobbing. As Graham starts shoveling food into his mouth, he's unable to fight back his own tears any longer. Getting up out of his chair, Morgan walks around the table and leans against his dad, who embraces him. When Beau then joins them, Graham reaches a hand out to Meryl, grabbing him by his t-shirt and pulling him towards them. As the family huddles together weeping, the baby monitor at the other end of the table lights up. Getting up from the table, Graham walks to the cupboard under the stairs and checks the television. A test card is being broadcast. Graham looks up from the screen.
It's happening.
A moment later, Meryl's boarding up one of the bedroom doors. Walking up to a window, Graham gazes out into the night. As he backs away from the glass, Meryl turns and sees him.
Graham, hurry!
Graham steps out onto the landing, and they set to work on boarding up another door. Morgan and Beau are standing at the top of the stairs, watching them.
Did I ever tell you what everyone said when you were born, Beau?
Beau just looks at him.
You came out of your mama, and you didn't even cry. You just opened your eyes, and you looked around the room at everybody. Your eyes are so big and gorgeous. All the ladies in the room just gasped. I mean, they literally gasped. And they go, oh, she's like an angel. And they said, we've never seen a baby so beautiful. Put you on the table to clean you up. And you looked up at me and you smiled. They say babies that young can't smile. You smiled. Let's go down now.
He picks her up, and Merrill fixes the last board in place. Heading downstairs, the family gathers in the hall.
Isabel.
Looking in the direction of the barn, they listen to the distant barks. Graham and Merrill exchange concerned glances. The noises move closer to the house.
Should we turn off the lights?
They already know we're here.
Staring at the living room wall, the family follows the source of the sounds with their eyes. Two shadows move across one of the boarded-up windows. Then move across another, as the noises move around to the front of the house. They turn to the back of the house. Then spin around to face the front door.
Dad.
Graham kneels down and puts his hands on Morgan's shoulders.
Do you know what happened when you were born, Morgan? You came out and your mama kept bleeding. So the doctors rushed you out of the room before I even had time to see you.
They're on the roof.
While they were fixing her up, all she kept asking about was you.
They're in the house.
I wanted your mama to see you first. Because she had dreamed about you her whole life. And she got feeling better. They brought you in. And they placed you in her arms. And she looked at you. And you looked at her. And you just stared at each other for the longest time. And then she said real soft, "Hello, Morgan. I'm your mama. You look just how I dreamed."
Moving to the bottom of the stairs, Merrill gazes up at the landing. Focusing on the ceiling, he notices one point of entry they've forgotten to secure.
The attic door.
The kids are staring at the bottom of the front door.
Let's go. Come on.
As they're dragged off towards the kitchen, three clawed fingers reach under the front door. A moment later, Graham calmly descends a flight of stairs leading down to a cellar and closes the door behind him.
I forgot our foil helmets.
I Have we got anything to wedge against the doorknob?
So read our minds.
You're scaring your sister.
I'm already scared.
Graham listens at the door.
Meryl.
I'm looking!
They know our secret thoughts.
Graham looks down at the doorknob. When it begins to twitch, he quickly reaches down and grips it firmly with both hands.
I'm not ready.
Meryl! I got it!
Reaching for an axe, Meryl inadvertently smashed the only light bulb, plunging them into darkness. Switching on a torch, Morgan points it across the room, where Graham and Meryl are pressing their shoulders against the door. The axe has been wedged underneath the doorknob. Graham turns to Morgan, shielding his eyes from the glare of the torch.
Where's Bo?
Scanning the cellar with his torch, Morgan finds her leaning against some crates.
I'm okay.
The noises outside begin to move around the cellar. As Morgan and Meryl cast their gaze over a wall lined with shelves, Morgan's torch beam falls on an old radio. Meryl switches it on and tries tuning it into a channel. When he's unable to find one, Meryl looks grave.
What's happening out there? I can't even imagine.
Hope they're doing better than we are. We don't even have helmets.
They spin around. Stepping forward, Graham places his hand against the door. He turns his back on the door.
They're only making noises. Not trying to get in. Why would they do that?
They want our attention on the door?
They're distracting us.
From what?
The book says they're probably very good problem solvers. They'll find a way in.
Morgan, give me your flashlight.
Morgan rolls it across the floor, and Graham picks it up.
They used to pour coal down in this basement. There's a coal chute in here.
Fanning out in search of a chute, Graham and Meryl run their torches over the walls.
I can feel air.
Me too!
It's getting stronger.
I'm close.
Converging on the same spot, they find Morgan standing with his back to a grill on the wall.
What?
A hand reaches through and grabs him.
Pull it!
I got it! Pull it!
In the confusion that follows, a torch drops to the floor, lying where it lands until a foot kicks it across the cellar. Emerging from her hiding place, Bo picks it up and points it at Meryl, who's busy piling boxes and sacks of dog food against the grill. Worn out from his exertions, he leans back against the barricade and slides down to the floor. Noticing a tin of dog food lying next to him, he picks it up and plonks it on top of the pile. Reaching for his torch, he fans it around the cellar. On the other side of the room, Graham sitting on the floor with Morgan on his lap, struggling to breathe.
We don't have his medicine. Don't be afraid, Morgan. We'll slow this down together. Feel my chest. Feel it moving in and out. Breathe like me. Come on.
I dreamed this.
Stay with me. I know. It hurts. Be strong, baby. It'll pass. It'll pass.
A worried Beau sits down on Merrill's lap, and they look on together as Morgan lies back against Graham's front, his hand gripping his dad's jeans, and his chest heaving up and down with every labored breath.
Don't do this to me again. Not again. I hate you. I hate you. Fear is feeding him. Don't be afraid of what's happening. Believe it's going to pass. Believe it. Just wait. Don't be afraid. The air is coming. Believe. We don't have to be afraid. It's about to pass. Here it comes. Don't be afraid.
Morgan loosens his grip on Graham's jeans.
Don't be afraid, Morgan. Feel my chest. Breathe with me. Together. The air is going in our lungs. Together. We're the same. We're the same.
Merrill gazes at them from across the cellar.
We should save the flashlights.
Merrill switches his off, then Beau follows suit, leaving them in total darkness. Graham's flagged down by Carol Ann.
Ray's truck swerved off the road, and he hit a Colleen and then a tree, and she was pinned between the two.
What does that mean, pinned?
The truck has severed most of her lower half.
What did you say?
She won't be saved. Her body is pinned in such a way that it's alive when it shouldn't be alive. And the truck is holding her together. And she doesn't feel much, and she's talking almost like normal. And we didn't pull the truck out because we want you to come down here and be with her as long as she's awake. And that won't be very long. Now, Father, do you understand what I've told you?
Carolyn, this is the last time I'm going to talk with my wife.
Yes, it is.
Walking along the road, Graham comes across a group of three police officers and a paramedic. Sitting at their feet, Ray stares at the ground in a state of shock. Walking on, Graham approaches Ray's pickup truck.
People think they came here to take over the planet. That's bull. I don't think that. My friend and I saw them.
Found a pack of light bulbs.
They poisoned his family. They dragged them away. Nobody believes me, but they didn't come here for our planet. This is a raid. They came here for us, to harvest us.
Graham listens intently.
Lucky as hell they're leaving.
They're leaving?
That's what they're saying.
How long have we been sleeping?
12 hours or so. They said they had poison gas. They secreted in small amounts. A lot of people died.
But they're leaving.
They left real fast this morning, like something scared them off. They left some of their wounded behind.
Where are they going?
People must have figured out a way to beat them. Everyone has a weakness, right?
Graham considers.
You didn't think we'd make it through the night, did you?
He shakes his head. Merrill steps towards him.
Listen, there's things I can take, and a couple things I can't. One of them I can't take is my older brother, who's everything I want to be.
starts losing faith in things. I saw your eyes last night. I don't want to ever see your eyes like that again. Okay? I'm serious.
Graham nods hesitantly.
Okay.
Morgan sleeping.
It's been like that for a while. He needs his medicine.
Have they said anything about our area?
Philadelphia and its outlying counties are cleared. But who knows for sure?
He's not strong enough. If he has another attack right now,
I know. We'd have to be sure before we opened up that door, Graham.
Kneeling down, Graham reaches into Morgan's back pocket and takes out the baby monitor. Merrill kneels beside him.
It's good enough for me.
Me too.
Removing the axe from underneath the knob, Merrill pulls the door open. Moving slowly and deliberately, he makes his way up the stairs, at the top of which, beams of sunlight penetrate the boards covering one of the windows through moon and star-shaped holes. Reaching the ground floor, he turns a corner and disappears from view. Returning to the top of the stairs, he looks down into the cellar and nods. Graham carries Morgan up the stairs.
Get the syringe as well. We may need to give him an epinephrine shot.
Merrill opens a kitchen cupboard. The boards over the dining room window have been knocked in, and a lampshade next to the window sits askew. Carrying Morgan into the living room, Graham lays him down on the sofa. Beau's been to the cupboard under the stairs.
They're doing this on TV.
She thrusts her hips.
And anything?
Yeah, like this.
Graham turns to Morgan.
You want to see it? I'll bring the TV in here.
We know the battle turned around in the Middle East. Three small cities there found a primitive method to defeat them. We have no further details at this time.
Wheeling the TV out of the cupboard, Graham pours it into the living room and goes to plug it in. An alien figure's reflected in the screen. As Graham slowly turns to face it, Merrill steps into the room and freezes, dropping Morgan's medication at his feet. The creature's holding Morgan. Merrill takes a step forward.
Merrill, wait.
Merrill steps back. The alien's holding Morgan with one hand, which has changed color to match the pattern on the boy's shirt. Noticing that two of its fingers are missing, Graham recalls slicing them off in Ray's kitchen. As the creature holds its other hand over Morgan's face, a stinger extends from inside its wrist. Silhouetted by sunlight flooding in through the living room window, the alien glares threateningly at Graham. Standing in the hall, Beau can only watch in horror. Gazing at the creature, Graham finds himself being transported back to the night of his wife's accident. Colleen's leaning over the bonnet of Ray's truck as he approaches her.
Hi, sweetie.
Hi, baby.
I was just taking a walk before dinner.
You love walks?
It was meant to be.
Does it hurt?
I don't feel much.
Good.
He takes her hand and presses it.
Tell Harmon to play games. It's okay to be silly.
I will.
Tell Beau to listen to her brother. He'll always take care of her.
I will.
And tell Grim.
I'm here.
Tell him. See. Tell him to see. And tell Meryl to swing away.
Her eyes glaze over.
See, what you have to ask yourself is, what kind of person are you? Are you the kind that sees signs, sees miracles? Or do you believe that people just get lucky? Is it possible? There are no coincidences.
Standing face to face with the alien creature in his living room, Graham slowly turns to Meryl. And the baseball bat, hanging on the wall beside him. He turns back to the alien.
Swing away, Meryl. Meryl, swing away.
Looking at him, Meryl turns around and reaches for the bat. Taking it down, he tightens his grip around the handle. Aiming its stinger, the alien fires a poisonous gas at Morgan's nostrils. As Beau screams and the creature turns to face her, Meryl steps forward and strikes it on the back. The alien drops Morgan onto the floor, and Graham rushes to pick him up, along with his medication. Another blow from Meryl knocks the alien back against a sideboard. Graham looks over as a glass of water spills over the creature's shoulder and burns its skin like acid. Casting his gaze around the room, Meryl takes in several more glasses resting on the various surfaces. Graham looks at Beau. He carries Morgan outside. Following them out the door, Beau peers in through the living room window, watching as Meryl aims a swing at several glasses of water sitting between him and the alien. In the backyard, Graham plunges a needle into Morgan's leg. Squaring up to the alien, Meryl prepares to deliver the knockout blow. Struck in the midriff, the alien topples backwards, hitting the floor directly underneath another glass of water, which falls onto its side, showering the alien's face. In the hall, half of Meryl's broken bat lies on the floor, amongst shards of glass and water. Reflected in the upturned TV, the alien creature breathes its last breath. Meryl rushes outside.
That's why I had asthma.
Morgan, still unconscious.
It can't be luck. His lungs were closed. His lungs were closed. No poison got in. No poison got in. His lungs were closed. His lungs are closed. Don't touch him. Give him a minute.
Graham?
Give him a second.
Daddy?
Don't touch him.
Beau begins to cry.
Graham.
Don't. Don't.
Dad? What happened?
Taking his hand away from his mouth, Graham looks down to see Morgan gazing up at him.
Did someone save me?
I think someone did.
From the upstairs window overlooking the yard, Graham and his family sit huddled together, bathed in sunlight. Graham's bedroom windows caved in and the curtains blowing gently in the breeze. Another window still boarded up from the night before. Time passes, and the landscape surrounding the house becomes carpeted with snow. The door connecting Graham's bedroom with the bathroom is ajar. Stepping out, wearing a black shirt and trousers, Graham pauses to fasten a button on his sleeve. Reaching for his watch, he slips it over his wrist and fastens it. Putting on his jacket, he turns around, revealing a reverend's collar around his neck, and steps out of the room.